Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Joel Klatt joins us. He's presented by Audi Flatirons. And Joel is a lifelong Bronco fan. He grew up in the backyard imitating John Elway, throwing the football. So let's start right there, Joel. When you look at guys that should be in the Ring of Fame that aren't, should Emmanuel Sanders be in there? Ed McCaffrey? Mark Schlereth? Guys that were part of championship teams, do they deserve extra consideration?
Maybe if Schlereth would just go with Stink, then you could cut down on the size of the name up there, right. And you could just put Stink up there, and then Mark, that might be your avenue right there.
I agree. You know, if we're worried about room. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I provide answers. That's what I tried to do, for you. So I'm here for you, Mark. There's no doubt. When it comes to Sanders, though, I think that his resume, when you look at it, and I was looking just kind of like briefly at some of the other guys. Ed McCaffrey's not in, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so Ed won two Super Bowls and has over, 60 more catches? You know, something like that, like 58 more catches, more yards, more touchdowns. They won back-to-back Super Bowls with him. He had that incredible block on that little flat route to Howard Griffiths, remember, in Super Bowl against the Packers.
Against Brian Williams. Outside backer.
Points at Brian Williams. So not only is he a member of two Super Bowl teams, he's a huge factor on those teams. He has iconic moments in the Super Bowl, and he's got better numbers than Emmanuel Sanders. So, unless Ed McCaffrey is up in that stadium, there is zero chance that Emmanuel Sanders should be up in that stadium over McCaffrey. Just period.
I'm fair enough with that, but they both should be, so.
Okay, well, if that's your argument, then I guess you can start talking about Emmanuel Sanders, but It's for me, it goes in order. You know what I mean? Like, you can't start lobbying for Sanders until McCaffrey is up there. By the way, Ed McCaffrey, I know that this is gonna be a little bit of a downer, but whatever. So we all know that the Monday Night Football game against the Giants happened on September 10th, 2001.
Correct.
You guys familiar? And he had that gruesome leg injury in that game. I have a lot of friends, actually, that work in the finance industry in New York. And something very odd and eerie about that game specifically is that Ed's history in New York as a Giant, if I'm not mistaken, led them to kind of stay up late and try to get updates on his condition, watch that game late. And I've had several guys who actually worked in the World Trade Center that said that they did not go in early on Tuesday because they were up late on Monday night.
Hmm.
It's just kind of one of those eerie things that...
I just got chills.
You know, sports and reality kind of overlap and intermingle together. When we were at Shinnecock Hills last year for the U.S. Open, that's when I got to meet and become friends with a lot of these guys. And they all, as soon as they heard I was from Denver originally and knew I was a Bronco fan, that's the first thing that they brought up was that Monday Night Football game, Ed McCaffrey, and then subsequent events the next morning.
Hmm. Now that's amazing. Hey, I want to get into this Broncos team a little bit with you. I know you study and you watch all this stuff. Thursday night might have been the most embarrassing game I've ever watched. The Broncos performing or underperforming or not performing at all. And so I would ask you this, based upon the lack of protection, based upon the lack of offensive scheme, based upon the fact that you gave up 9 sacks, and that's as much to me on your coordinator and your tight ends and your wide receivers and your running backs and your offensive line. It's just as much on your coordinator, if not more on your coordinator, when you give up 8 sacks in a game. That's just horrendous. So I would ask you this, at what point if you're running the show, would you put in Drew Lock to see where we are?
Well, I think that we need to get him healthy first and foremost. If I'm not mistaken, that thumb injury is getting a lot better, but he's not, back onto the, he's not practicing. He's not on the active roster. I think that they're saying like week 11, if I'm not mistaken, is a time that he can be starting to practice again after the bye week. And you're right, by the way, about the sacks. And I don't want to let Joe Flacco off the hook, because Mark, we've actually defended him at times during the course of the year.
Yes.
And you and I have talked about some of the quality things that he's done. Well, there's also been some things that he's done specifically in that game against Kansas City that I thought were just atrocious. There were several times where he held the ball far too long. It's my belief, and trust me, I was like a clown blow-up doll with sand in the bottom, getting punched in the mouth and coming back for more. It's my belief that it's equally on the quarterback to protect himself as it is on the offensive line. And part of that is getting the football out on time. Timing is such a critical aspect of throwing the football and the passing game. And you can't just expect to sit back there and expect the offensive line to block for more than, I would say kind of 2 3/4 seconds, somewhere in that 2.75 seconds. As soon as you hit that mark, and really 2.5, as soon as you hit that 2.5, boy, that ball had better be about ready to come out. You know, as soon as, because we used to keep the timing of the offense and the feet of the quarterback. That's the old West Coast adage. That's how Bill Walsh did it with Joe Montana. And if you take one hit, you're on to the second progression. If you take a second hit, you're on to the third man in the progression. If you're past the second hitch in your drop, you better have that ball out to the check down. You're either check down as yourself with your own feet, which of course Flacco can't do, or it's to the back or whatever the outlet receiver is. And that ball's got to be out. If that doesn't happen before 2.5 or 2 3/4 seconds, then there's a huge problem, and that problem is the quarterback. And when I look at the timing of this, and I pulled this from a guy, and I'm assuming that these are correct and that he timed them, but if you look at the 8 sacks that can be attributed to the offense outside of that fake punt, what you see is virtually every single one of those sacks, he held the ball for over 2.5 seconds, and in all but one, held it over 2.75 seconds. Here's the numbers. 2.71, 2.88, 3.16, 3.27, 3.12, 3.38, 3.03. He's holding the ball for over 3 seconds. You can't do that.
But isn't
you
this
can't
what,
do that in college.
But Joel, isn't this what you signed up for when you got Joe Flacco? The understanding that this is a guy who wants to go down the field when he throws the football, and he's not a quick release type guy. So why'd you bring him in here in the first place if you knew that he'd be susceptible to that many hits and sacks because he likes to hold on to the ball?
Okay, so this is where I swing back, and then we'll agree with Mark, because Mike, it's at that point, it's about the concept being called. If you're not giving him, it's not about your ability to get the ball out quickly from a release standpoint. It's about making the decision of where the ball is supposed to be coming out. If you're not giving him short concepts that can get the ball out of his hands when you're in the midst of getting sacked 8 times, then that's on you as a play caller. That's on you from a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday perspective when you're building the game plan. And so, is it some sort of combination? Yes. Were there some times when he was taking sacks when there was short route concepts being run that he needs to get the ball out on a more quicker fashion? Absolutely. So, again, it's not about how quickly you release the football. It's about the decision of where the ball comes out and then having the opportunity via the concept by the play caller to get that ball out in a proper time.
100%. I mean, it's there's plenty of blame to go around. So I would say this: Emmanuel Sanders now in San Francisco. Joel, again, I go back to your expertise on football in general. This football team is not very good, even though the AFC is not very good. My concern for the Denver Broncos is you go out and you win a few games, and all of a sudden you have this kind of inflated opinion of what you are. And to me, you're not any good. You're below average. So I would rather see them move pieces and accept the fact that they're rebuilding and go in that direction. I'm concerned, and I would ask you if you're concerned, if they win a few games, if they over-evaluate or they give themselves a little bit more credit than they really deserve.
Well, I mean, I hope that they win, right? I'm a Bronco fan. I want to see them win football games. But I've said this a lot, that, you know, this league is built for 8-8, and it's built for a kind of purgatory, and it's built for teams that think they're good enough but really aren't, and they play on that vanity from an organizational perspective, and teams that just think like, well, we probably could make the playoffs. I tell you, being a wild card team in the NFL, outside of a couple of years, one specifically being the Steelers, you know, unless and that Steelers team had a great defense, they had a really good quarterback. I think being a wild card team is one of the worst things you can do in the league. Again, like, I want A's or I want F's. And I think it would be smart for Denver to start thinking about how do we become an A football team. I don't want to be a B-minus football team in the AFC. That's just, like, perpetually average. That might sound crazy, and I'm not suggesting tanking, but I am suggesting you start moving pieces around so that you can build a roster for the future that can potentially be an A roster. Are they one piece away? No. That's why, you know, I bristle a little bit at, like, well, we got to see Drew Lock. It's like, what's Drew Lock going to do for this team? It's not a good team. You know, they're not going to beat Indianapolis, I don't think. Cleveland maybe is a coin flip at that point. So what are they, 3-6? I mean, 3-6 in a really bad AFC. Everyone's pounding on New England about saying, like, well, they're not playing anybody. It's like, well, they're playing the teams that are in front of them. And in this conference, in particular the AFC, it's not very good whatsoever. When the backup quarterback for Kansas City can come in and just absolutely throttle you at home, you're not a good football team. And that's not even B-minus football being played. So if there's some sort of illusion that Denver's going to play above their head to get to B-minus wild card status, I think people are wildly mistaken, Mark.
Visiting with Joe Klatt, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports, and he's presented by Audi Flatirons. All right, the whole issue about, and I love your quarterback perspective here. So one of the arguments about, hey, don't throw Drew Lock in behind this offensive line. All you're running the risk of is getting him hurt physically and battering his confidence. We saw Sam Darnold on Monday night, rough night, gets picked off four times, loses a fumble, gets mic'd up and heard, I'm seeing ghosts. How do you walk that fine line between, hey, he's got to learn, there's a sink or swim element to it, got to find out how he can handle all this stuff versus protect him from that stuff?
I think it's a case-by-case basis. It's a great question, and it's the absolute first thing, only thing that Denver should be thinking about. And I think it's person by person. It's quarterback by quarterback. You know, David Carr was ruined because he was the first draft pick of the Houston Texans before they could protect him at all. And he was effectively ruined as a player because of that. Peyton Manning started right away and became one of the top three or four quarterbacks to ever play the game. Andrew Luck played right away. We see other guys that need to have time. And I will tell you that it's not an advantageous spot. I would not want to play behind this offensive line. If I looked up in the huddle and saw Garrett Bowles, I would just, like, give him a couple of Hail Marys right there. I would be like, where are the rosary beads? I mean, that guy is brutal. And he's playing left tackle in the National Football League. The offensive line is not good enough to win, regardless of quarterback. The fact that it's this offensive line, I would be very reluctant if I was the brass to throw out the quote-unquote, we got to see what we've got. Because candidly, even behind this offensive line, do we really know what we've got? Guys, that's a tough deal. And the bottom line for me is, John Elway has got to fix the offensive line. I don't need a splashy receiver. I don't need a tight end. I don't need another defensive end, if you will, pass rusher. Like, you've got to win at the line of scrimmage on the offensive side, and this offensive line is not very good. I think that it's a bottom 10, bottom 5 offensive line in all of football.
All right, you follow college football. How strong is this upcoming quarterback class, and is there urgency to find out what you have in Drew Lock? Because the Broncos will likely have a top 10 pick, and might you want to get one of these quarterbacks that will be out there next year?
Yeah, I think that these quarterbacks are pretty good. I think that I would view at minimum the top three and maybe the top four better than Locke. And I would value them higher than Locke. And the top four, or at least the guys that I'm looking at, I would consider Herbert from Oregon, Tua from Alabama, Fromm from Georgia, and Eason from Washington. All of those four are kind of the guys that I'm looking at. There might be some more guys that are intriguing to people, but those are the ones that I think are really intriguing. I think Herbert is ultimately the guy that might be the most talented. I think Tua has had the best college career. I'm really worried about this injury.
Oh, we lost him for just a second.
Yeah.
We'll get him right back. Because I want him to finish that. Because I love his perspective on the quarterbacks, and especially these college guys. Tua, Fromm, who I love. Eason from Washington. And
I want to know about
Herbert.
Jalen Hurts.
If that's your real name.
You know?
Herbe. Yeah, ask what about Hurts.
Yeah.
Hey, if we know one thing about Joel, he has a love affair with Lincoln Riley. So.
Yeah.
Get a room.
He loves Lincoln.
Man.
Lincoln, what are you wearing, Lincoln? That'd be my first question if I was Joel. Next time I interview Lincoln.
A little ode to Lincoln?
Ode to Lincoln.
What are you wearing?
All right,
we got it back. Sorry, Joel, we lost you there. So you were talking about the quarterbacks.
Hey, listen, I apologize about that. Yeah, Lincoln Riley might be interesting. Oh, did the Broncos have $10 million a year? That might be what it takes to get Lincoln Riley. I wonder what Cologne wears.
Yeah.
I think I would try to do everything exactly like Lincoln Riley does.
But told you.
You asked about those college quarterbacks. I've given you kind of a rundown. All four of the top four that are on my list right now, I think, would be quarterbacks that I would rate higher than Drew Locke, regardless of if he got to do.
Where do you put Hurts, Jalen Hurts?
I think he's going to be a middle round at highest guy. He is. So one of the things that he's trying to develop is the ability to get through progressions and show that he can utilize the entirety of the passing game before he takes off and runs. He's a really talented guy. He doesn't quite throw the football on time like we've seen with previous Oklahoma quarterbacks. He doesn't anticipate windows quite like those last two guys. But his willingness to run makes them as dangerous of an offense completely or holistically as they were the last couple of years. But I think he's a middle-round guy.
Finally, Joel, I know that you have mostly had a hate-hate relationship with the 8 a.m. texters over the years, but this one came in that I think you'll get a chuckle out of. Regarding the whole Ring of Fame debate, it says, Joel probably thinks he belongs in the Ring of Honor at Mile High for the punishments he gave CSU and funding the CU golf program.
I mean, you're welcome, golfers. Happy to provide your entire existence at the University of Colorado. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. No, I don't belong on any Ring of Fame whatsoever. Absolutely not. I was a very average try-hard player that got the most out of my ability in a time in which there was not a lot of quarterbacks at Colorado.
Well, you did have some pretty good moments there at the stadium.
We had decent moments. I got to tell you, one of the most disappointing parts that I think everybody, unless you've got, what was it, Mark, four Super Bowl rings? You got four?
Three. Yeah. Only three.
Okay, you got three Just Super three. Bowl rings. Unless you got multiple Super Bowl rings, I think most players, regardless of what level their career ends as an athlete, looks back with some amount of frustration or regret. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving you a peek behind the dark side of the curtain. I think that's why a lot of athletes and former athletes, in particular college athletes and NFL players, deal with a pretty significant amount of depression when they're done. I know that this is not exactly what you asked, but I will tell you this. Like, one of the most disappointing things for me about my time at Colorado, and this is one of many disappointing things I'll give you, the best game I ever played was my very first start. I'm like, that's not how you want it to go. Like, peaked too early. Peaked too early, guys. We had some good moments, and I have, you know, so many fond memories, certainly. But that first one, my only start in Mile High was that game against Colorado State in 2003, I guess it was, when we beat that loudmouth Bradley Van Pelt, which was so, I mean, gosh, it was so good.
Well, if you've listened to this station for more than 5 minutes, the one thing that you'll know is you do not want to crescendo too early. Somebody asked real quick, what do you think about Joe Burrow?
From LSU.
Yeah.
I really like Joe Burrow. He's going to play himself into that top four like I was talking about. And one of the things that I think people are going to really love about Joe Burrow is his development under Joe Brady. So Joe Brady is their passing game coordinator. He came from the New Orleans Saints this last season, and he's in his first year at LSU. So now the NFL guys are getting to see Joe Burrow run an NFL passing game and a little bit of an expanded passing game. He's first in the country in completion percentage.
Now, on that note,
right.
We lost Joe. Okay.
All right, see you, Joe.
See ya. You were awesome. Presented by Audi Flatirons.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC. First
Bank. Banking for good.